Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Create a brighter future with a savings plan from Zurich. Visit zurich.ie to find out more.
World leaders have paid tribute today to the former Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev, who passed away in Moscow last night. US President Joe Biden hailed him as a rare leader who made the world a safer place. Meanwhile, Russia's Vladimir Putin expressed his deepest sympathies over Mr. Gorbachev's death. While he was praised in the West for helping to bring almost five decades of Cold War politics to an end, he was viewed with suspicion by many Russians, who blamed him for the mass poverty which accompanied the introduction of market reforms. So how will Gorbachev be remembered in Russia and indeed internationally following his death last night? Konstantin Gurdiev is an economist and associate professor with the University of Northern Colorado and lived in Russia when Gorbachev was in power. And he joins me now to discuss his legacy. Konstantin, you're very welcome to the programme. It's good to talk to you again. As we said, you spent many years living and working in Dublin, but you were born and bred in Moscow when Gorbachev was a leader there and on the world stage. How did you view him then?
Indeed, you know, yes, Cormac, thanks, by the way, for having me. It's an absolute pleasure talking to your listeners and to yourselves as well. During the time when Gorbachev came to power, it was a big change for us back in the Soviet Union, especially for the kind of probably professional urban, if you want, classes of the Soviet Union. There was an introduction of the kind of more openness in the discussion, dialogue, media. In terms of arts, for example, there was more openness. All of a sudden, the years of this oppression of 1970s of the Brezhnevite regime, and then, of course, the subsequent tightening of the rules by Andropov in the early 80s, and then followed by the kind of years of decade and nothing happening, no change, no reforms during the Chernenko regime. All of that was upended by Gorbachev literally overnight. May 85, he comes into power. May 85, he delivers his first speech criticizing the economic and social system of governance and planning in the Soviet Union and management. In February 86, at the Congress of the Communist Party, major event, he delivers yet another stinging speech about the need for reforms. For us sitting back in the kitchens in the Soviet Union, and I was in my late teens already at that stage, and I remember myself, my parents, my grandparents sitting there and saying, this is good. We need to have that. We need to have that change. And then, of course, you know, the years of the 1980s, as they evolve thereafter from 1985 onwards, the reforms, they start to kind of produce both the positive effects and the negative effects. And the negative effects start overshadowing the reforms themselves and that momentum by about 1989, 1990. So when the Soviet Union collapsed...
Tell people about the negative effects, Konstantin. And he was blamed, wasn't he, for a lot of those?
Oh, yes, of course. And even at the time when he was just unveiling them, there was a lot of blame going around. But that blame accelerated subsequently with the Yeltsin's reforms. But what happened there is, say, take, for example, the timeline of February 1986. He allows the cooperative ownership of enterprises. And he allows some of the enterprises in agriculture and light manufacturing to go out of the shadow of the black economy and gray economy and into official economy as private ventures. So all of a sudden you have influx of new products and services in the economy, and that happened very fast, literally by about, say, 1987. So a year later, you have new restaurants open, you have the markets booming in terms of agricultural products and, you know, things that are not available in grocery stores. But with that comes the relaxation of prices. And of course, in order to generate this output, you had to have this relaxation of prices. So price controls drop. So the Russian people, ordinary Russians and ordinary Soviets, are looking at it from the point of view of there's this new abundance of goods that is available to us and service alternatives available to us, but none of it can be affordable to us. Mm-hmm. So resentment starts building up. And this is why Gorbachev realizes by late 87, early 88, that this is not enough, that the Soviet economy needs modernization, needs investment at much higher scale. So May 88, he allows the joint ventures.
Is that why then he went abroad and said, look, bring your investment here? Because it was fascinating as a child watching Russia on the news in the late 1980s, because we saw stories about the ruble going crazy and losing its value and prices going up and queues outside stores for basic foodstuffs like bread as well. Mm. But then you saw Gorbachev and the world stage with Reagan and Thatcher. But that was part of his plan then, as you say, to draw investment back to the Soviet Union. Is that it?
Oh, the genius and probably also the tragedy of Gorbachev's legacy as well is simultaneously, I mean, as a statesman, what defines Gorbachev is that he wasn't just a reformer in one area, like economic reforms, mm-hmm. political reforms, geopolitical reforms. This is a person who is taking a kind of, if you want, extremely rare position in the Russian history and the Soviet history, of course, and global history, really, not only to react to pragmatism of recognizing the reality around him, such as, for example, geopolitical pressures and the need for some sort of the clawing back on the Cold War between the United States and Russia and between Europe and Soviet Union, but also accommodating that reality comes with idealism. And that idealism pushes him to introduce multiple fronts of reforms, probably something that cost him both his power, but also ultimately cost Russia and a number of other former Soviet Union republics, mm-hmm. Caused a lot of pain down the road. He literally targeted political change. He targeted geopolitical change, and he targets economic reforms as well.
And eventually it cost the Soviet Union as a structure as well. But the decision not to send in the tanks to East Germany, that was a decision he explained later, Konstantin. First and foremost, he said he didn't want bloodshed. And surely that must, I mean, surely within Russia, how is that viewed? That's my question. How is that viewed? Is it viewed as the start of the deterioration of the great empire? Or is it viewed as a noble decision?
Both. It depends on whom you ask. If you ask people like myself, if you ask people like, you know, that I grew up with, people who look towards the West as the potential for reforms and kind of image of reforms, liberal democracy as a potential image of reforms that Russia needs and Soviet Union needs, then of course we actually look at it from the point of view of somebody, a Russian leader or Soviet leader who is avoiding bloodshed as a principle is something pretty novel to begin with, yes? And it's something that is to be welcomed. But of course we also were aware at the time, I might say again, in our circles, we were aware of at the time that Germany didn't belong in the Soviet orbit, that Poland didn't belong in Soviet orbit, that the Baltic states deserved their independence and needed to be given that independence and be allowed to have that independence. And on and on and on. So we were welcoming those changes. We were welcoming those reforms. We've seen perhaps at the time, and we were, of course, uncertain and panicked by what those reforms mean and what those changes will bring to us. But at the same time, we also realized that that was time. It has to happen. On the other hand, of course, a very large percentage of the Soviet population and Russian population as well now felt resentful about the collapse of the Soviet Union, disintegration of the only country they lived in, country that raised them, country that they felt obliged to in terms of a range of services, options, yeah. life options and career options that was provided to them. So it's understandable. It's a really complex scenario. And one of the things that is very important for us to remember is that as history and historians move in now and take over Gorbachev's legacy and start working with it over time, the perceptions of Gorbachev will change. But one thing which will never change is the fact that we just lost a major statesman, statesperson that we don't have equivalents of anymore in the West and or in the East for that matter. Okay. So as a result of that, this is a very big historical moment for us.
Yeah.
Not just for Soviets, not just for Russians, but, or other.
In terms of global history. Yeah. I think you're right. We are at a crossroads in terms of how statecraft is done without question, especially when you look at the Liz Truss, Rishi Sunak debates of late. But can I ask you, and others as well, can I ask you finally about Vladimir Putin and how he will deal with this now, the passing of Mikhail Gorbachev? Will there be a state funeral? And also, he was critical some years ago of Vladimir Putin, but not in most recent years, isn't that right?
Yes, he was critical of Putin cautiously. He tried with his foundation different kind of, if you want, intensity of criticism and areas of criticism. It backfired back in 2011, 2012, a couple of times. And Gorbachev kind of went back to being a pragmatic statesman in that sense, and kind of clawed back his or pulled back his criticism and worked behind the scenes through his foundation more on the humanitarian side of policies, more on the humanitarian side of political culture in Russia. So in many ways, Putin had been at peace with Gorbachev. There was no love lost there beyond any doubts. But there probably will be a state funeral, of course. Putin seems to be respectful of the past office of presidency that Gorbachev held for a very short period of time. He seems to be kind of, respectful to project enough stateshood. What's important is for us to understand is that with the death of Gorbachev, this we have yet another nail in the coffin of the moderate Russian style, if you want, liberal reformists kind of model of political engagement. And what that opens for us is not so much even uncertainty as to how Vladimir Putin is going to react, but how is the Russian society going to continue evolving when one of the major figures in this, again, very moderate, very subtle, perhaps not as visible from the West, but nonetheless opposition to the evolving, if you want, increasing autocracy in Russia. How is that going to play out into the future?
It's a very important question you pose, I think, and one we'll return to perhaps in the very near future. Konstantin Gurdiev, though, Associate Professor with University of Northern Colorado. Good to speak with you again. Thank you very much indeed.